Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2, for Autumn Semester 2017. Lecture 13, delivered on October 3, 2017. The title of this lecture is Bonds.
Today, bonds. And this is actually a straight up math is involved, but actually we do this on calculators now, unless you want to use the tables like the accountants do. A lot of the technical side of it is just keying in the numbers correctly, making sure that you remember all of the details that you have to have in your mind to be able to answer the get the right answer. First things first, as I had said before, the bond market is 10 times the size of the stock market. It is a much larger market. It is a quieter market because essentially at the end of a bond's life, the lender gets back his original loan. And along the way, he gets coupon payments, which represents the interest on the loan. So corporate and government bonds, as I had said before, don't work like consumer loans. You are not making payments that bring down your balance during the life of the loan if it's a corporate or a government loan. When you get a car loan, you decide you were going to get yourself a 1979 Ford Pinto. You remember the Pintos? They were the ones, if you hit them in the back, they burst into a flame. It was really cool. Pinto. Whoa, he went right off the roof, too. But you decide you're going to get one. It's a classic, $3,000. You get a four-year loan on it. Now, as you make the payments on that, you are paying down the balance of the loan. Those are consumer loans. Same with a house loan. I mean, at first, your payments go mostly to interest, but as time goes on, more and more of your payments go to the principal. But with corporate and government loans, there's no payment down on that original loan. Now, first things first, and I had said this before, make sure you get this in your notes. This is a kind of a classic question. Hint, hint. All loans, unless there's some weird thing going on, have a face value. In other words, how much is being lent theoretically of $1,000? In other words, any corporate or government debt will be issued in blocks of $1,000. So if you want a $200,000 loan, corporate loan, you're a corporation, you want to borrow $200,000, you would be issuing, what, 200 bonds. That's how you would do it. So I don't ever have to tell you the face value. We assume that it's $1,000. That is what the company is going to pay back at the end of the loan. Now, let me do one. TXV. Oh, let's do 5%, 2047. Now, what that means is that the company with trading symbol TXV has issued debt. We don't know how much, and actually kind of it doesn't matter for the purposes we do in this exercise. And it is due in 2047. In other words, the term of this loan right now is 30 years. The term of the loan right now is 30 years. In 2035, the term would be 17 years. Term means how much time is left. Maturity is when it is due. Maturity is when it's due. Term is how long it's before it's due. Now, the 5% here, that is the interest rate. This company is going to pay 5% of the face value. In other words, $50 per bond per year. $50 per bond per year. That's what they're going to pay. In other words, they will service the debt for the next 30 years with $50 payments every year to the lenders. And then at the end, they'll make one last $50 payment, and they'll also make the loan good. They'll pay the $1,000. That's how it works. Yeah, go ahead.
Did you say all loans, is that all non-consumer loans?
All non-consumer. Now, interestingly enough, there are versions of this in consumer markets. Sometimes you'll have what is called a balloon loan, where it is actually simply serviced until the end, and then there's this balloon payment. You pay the balance, the principal at the end. Or in some cases, you'll have a hybrid where you will make payments that are actually smaller than what's due, what you should, to pay off the loan by the end. But then at the end, there's one last payment that's the balloon on the loan. This is how car leases work. You get a nice low payment on a lease. At the end, you make one last lease payment, and then you get that giant, you have to pay this amount. And you can choose to actually pay it and keep the car or walk away and not pay it and just give the car back to them. So there are hybrids involved too sometimes, like that one. There were all these ideas over the years. Anyway, I got to talk about that more, but let me get here. Now, I'm going to do these very simply at first. Real world, though, the companies don't usually actually pay $50 a year. What they do instead is they pay two $25 payments a year. In other words, they break up that 5% into two and a half. Now, I've even heard of loans now where they do them in four payments. So that'd be $12.50 every 3 months. I've been told about these. I have not seen this yet. I'm pretty sure. I've been told that some companies are actually issuing bonds where they have the coupon, which is always annual, but they break it up into 12 monthly payments. Now, the idea there, from what I was told, was that, look, bonds are very popular with certain types of lenders, investors. Investors who want to put away the money for a long time and just get a check over and over. Really? That's supposed to be off. Over and over. They're supposed to just kind of get a check. And then at the end, they get their money back and then do something else with it. So it seems to me that the logic of making monthly payments is for these kinds of things like pension plans, where they want to put the money away for a long time in a safe investment, but at the same time, they want a cash flow so that they've got the money to send out their monthly checks to their annuitants, to their pensioners. That's my guess as to why that would be kind of something to do. Anyway, excuse me. Okay, so this is the basic outline. Bond quotes, interestingly enough, are not as easy to find as stock quotes. Every time I start this lecture, I think to myself, well, I'm going to go get some bond quotes and show them. They used to be easy to find, and now you actually have to go into some of the screens like Morningstar or Bloomberg to find bond quotes. They're not, like I said, not as easy as they used to be to find. Here's the thing. They are not as sexy as stocks. They don't go up and down hard and fast. They tend to be stable, and they tend to stay around their face value. Because at the end, you're going to get your $1,000. So the price essentially has an anchor. At the end, the thing's going to be $1,000. So if it goes up or it goes down, it's not going to go way far away from that 1,000 unless the company is in serious trouble. Like, for example, a bond like, a Netflix bond. You're going to see the price around 1,020, 980, in that range. It's always going to be floating, so there's not a lot of speculative value in something like that. Now, you look at a bond like Sears, that's one issued by Sears. Sears is nearly dead, so those bonds are selling at massive discounts to par. I looked at them last semester, and the Sears bond was like $328. Now, it should be around $1,000. $328 means the investors... Hardly anyone wants one. You're buying one just hoping that the company is going to survive. Or sometimes investors will buy those bonds that are from companies that are nearly dead with the speculation that when the company goes bankrupt and is liquidated, the first thing that happens is the bondholders are made as close to whole as possible. So there might be a speculation, $328 says this company is going to be dead, but if the company goes bankrupt, maybe when they liquidate, I'll get closer to $1,000 in liquidation. It's a speculation that can happen sometimes. Anyway, enough of that nonsense. Look, bond calculations. You need let me point this out. If I give you a bond with a price of $1,048.28, the quote is $104.82. Always make sure you see whether I have given you a quote or given you a price, and make sure that when I ask you, that you, if I say, quote the bond, you give me a tenth of the price. And don't put a dollar sign on it, for God's sake, because the price is 10 times that. So if I say, quote the bond, you do the calculations on your calculator, and then you'll see the price come out. Make it a tenth to answer the question. For heaven's sakes, be sure you know that. Quote the bond. If I say give me the price of the bond, then you give me what the calculator says. But if I say quote the bond, you do that. And when you buy bonds, for heaven's sakes, don't think that what you're seeing is the price. That's the quote. I think I already told you the story about a guy I know. He thought he was one of these super day traders some years back when it was still fairly new. He bought a bunch of bonds. He saw the quotes at 97.25 or something like that. And he bought a pile of them because he thought they were a bargain, only to find out that what he had bought was 10 times as expensive. And he just had a fit. He was threatening to sue everybody for misquoting the bonds. No, Frank, that was the quote. The price is 10 times that. You should have known that. But anyway. Okay, so know that there's a quote, which is a tenth of the price. Historically, that was because these giant broadsheets that were printed decades, centuries ago, they needed to pack as much as they could into the columns every morning. So by putting every bond price as a quote, they didn't have as wide a number, so they could make the columns smaller for those broadsheets that the stock people and bond people bought off the vendors on the streets in New York City. Anyway, here's the deal. The market, this is what the company is going to pay its lenders for bearing the risk of making the loan. The coupon is what the company is going to pay the lenders for bearing the risk of making the loan to the company. The coupon would be lower for a high quality corporation. The coupon would be lower for a lower quality corporation. Now, when the company issues the bond, it's going to try to hit as close as it can what the market thinks the coupon should be. So if a company is working with its investment bankers and all that, they say, well, right now, you're a AA corporate bond. That's what we figure your rating is, what is going to be for this bond issue. And AA's, the benchmark AA is at 5%. So we're going to make the ask for these loans. We're going to issue the bonds with coupon of 5% because that is what the risk level is that the investors want rewarded for now. Unfortunately, as time goes on, interest rates are going to go up and down in the economy, risk levels up and down. So as time goes on, the market is going to reassess 5%. And they might say, well, you know, we've got loans outstanding to this company at 5%. But, you know, these bonds that are similar to this that are now being issued are 6%. So they're stuck with 5% bonds, so a bunch of investors are going to sell these bonds in the secondary market, and there you go. This bond will go down in price if market thinks coupon is too low, bond will fall below par. And par is $1,000. We'd say that it now sells at a discount to par. The market thinks 6% is appropriate. The bond pays 5%. So the investors are going to punish the bond, selling it off to other suckers, drive the price down below par. That will make it a deal. That will make it acceptable to buy for others because then they'll say, yeah, the coupon's too low, but it is selling at a discount to par. On the other hand, suppose that the interest rates start to fall. The Fed starts, are we under an air raid? Okay, it's just flashbacks. It's a, right, okay, I'm good. I heard that, and then the next thing is the whistling sound. If the market thinks the coupon is too high for the interest rate environment, then buyers in the secondary market are going to start wanting this bond. There's going to be more demand for it, and that'll drive the price up. Bond will rise above par. Okay, now, a bond that sells below par, we say, is selling at a discount to par. A bond that is selling at a higher price than $1,000 at a premium to par. Now, keep this terminology in your heads. For one thing, I might ask something like this, just a simple question on a quiz to see if you get this. And also, I tend to use this terminology relatively frequently once I have introduced it. Okay. Now, here's the thing, though, is let's say TVX 5% 2047 yields, let's say 5.3%. What is the price? Now, I'm going to just take you through it, write down the steps. It's easy. We've done almost this before. It's the thing, though, is that it's, you see, the bond is almost a perfect level annuity. Coupon, 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 coupon for the life. You should be able to find the present value of an annuity. Unfortunately, there's that $1,000 thing there at the end hanging off the end when they pay back the face value of the bond, and that screws up the annuity calculation, at least for part of it. Nope, I didn't want to do that. Let me see if I can find the documents. There it is. Okay, just put down the steps here. Okay, yes. Okay, so now, clear it. Apps, Finance, TVM Solver. Again, Apps, Finance, TVM Solver. Now, the N is the term of the bond. In this case, the term is 30 years. Here's where you got to watch yourself, please. The I percent, you see two percentages in this problem. The I percent is the market. Write that down. I percent is the market. Otherwise, you can say the I percent is the yield. I percent is the market. I percent is the yield. Those two are interchangeable. So when you see that I percent, don't put the coupon in there. Put in, if you know it. Now, that I'll show you the problem where you don't know it. But this is where the market's assessment of the risk of the company is inserted. In this case, the market thinks that this bond should pay 5.3%. PV is the price value. I asked for the price, so that means I have to leave that one alone. The payment is where you put on in the coupon as a dollar amount. TVX is paying a coupon of 5%. That's 5% of $1,000. So you put in, you can put it, if you want to, 0.05 times 1,000. It doesn't matter. Sometimes it's, if it's a weird thing, 0.05 times 1,000. What the heck is this all about? Did you see that? It's doing that crap again. What is going on with this? That's why I'm keep trying to keep popping up this weird thing here. I give up. I just, anyway. Okay, put in $50. Okay? Now remember, here's the thing. More realistically, it would be a semi-annual coupon. So up at I percent, I'd put 5.3 divided by 2. And I'm sorry. Yeah, actually, I would, yeah, okay, I would put the N at 60 periods, 30 times 2, the I percent 5.3 divided by 2, and the payment $50 divided by 2. I'll do that in a little bit. I just want to show you a simple one first, though. Now, the future value, here's the thing. Different from what I've done before. In this one, there is a future value. That's the kicker at the end, the $1,000 they pay back. This is how this one is different from the consumer loans I showed you before. In the consumer loans, there's no balloon at the end, there's no kicker at the end. But in corporate and government debt, there is that $1,000. Don't forget to put that in. Now, leave everything else alone. Now, the payment will always be at the end. I can't think of when it would be at the beginning. So make sure that your PMT is there. Now let's go back and let's get the price value. Put the cursor back up on PV and just say alpha solve. And you're done. And it always gives present values as negatives. Don't do that. 955.41. The price is 955.41. $955.41. That's the price of this bond. The quote would be $95.54. The quote would be $95.54. So be careful which one I ask you for, or which one they ask for in the text, okay? Now, let me make it a little more realistic. Semi-annual coupons. It's the same bond, but instead of paying $50 a year, it pays it in two installments. So in other words, there would be, in this case, not 30 years, but 30 times two periods, 60. And the market's assessment of the risk, the yield, you would divide by two. Because that 5.3% would be divided into two periods per year. And finally, instead of $50 a year, it would be 50 divided. One of you hacked this, didn't you? Just to irritate me. Anyway, 25. You do 50 divided by 2. Now, this time we go up and we get the price value again. Notice it will be a little different now because the coupons are being paid twice a year. Alpha solve, $955.18. Now, that's not a huge difference, obviously, but it is enough of a difference that if you're talking about millions of dollars in bonds, it would add up to something. $955.18 with semi-annual coupons. Notice something. Regardless of which way you do it, this bond is selling at a discount to par. You see it? This bond is selling at a discount to par. Why is it selling at a discount to par? Because the coupon is not good enough for the market. So the market spanks the bond. That's all there is to it. This is a classic question for a quick quiz question. Look, you got a bond that is sitting, the coupon is 8%. The market's the yield on the bond is, let's say, 7.5%. Well, in a case like that, the bond would sell at a premium to par. Watch this. Suppose that this market, instead of saying that the bond should pay 5.3%, suppose that the yield the market wants is, let's say, 4.5%. In other words, the market says this bond should pay 4.5% per year, but it's paying a little more than that. It pays 5% per year. So we do 4.5 divided by 2, and then go back down, watch. This bond will now sell at a premium to par. Alpha solve. Look at it. See it? Because the market says you should pay 4.5%. Oh, you're paying 5%? Well, that's a good bond. So the demand for this bond will increase because it's paying a nice coupon better than what the market says it needs to. So there will be price pressure upward. So this bond will sell at a premium to par. You follow it? Once you do a few of these, you get the hang of it. It becomes almost like second nature. You look at bonds. Now, you notice that in these examples, you see that, I mean, the market's interest rates were swinging up and down. 5.3% knocked the bond down by about $45. 4.5% knocked the bond up by about what? $82. Not a lot of price volatility compared to the $1,000 that is the peg of it. So that kind of gives you an example of why bonds tend to be quieter. They're a safer investment. Now, I'm going to do a couple more examples just to get you the hang of it. But before I do that, the next question would be, okay, who lends money to corporations? Who invests in bonds? The first thing is that bonds, generally speaking, are safer than stocks. Remember that. The reason is simple. Bonds get paid off before stockholders get anything. Bonds have the prior claim on cash flows. This is a classic question I ask on exam one. So make sure, I mean, it's almost, I will not guarantee anything. But it's important to know that when the money of a company earns money, before it can do anything for its owners, it has to pay its outside debt holders. It has to pay their interest payments. It has to pay its light bills. It has to pay its salaries. It has to pay its taxes to the government. All of its obligations that are external, all of its obligations that are external have to be paid first. Bonds are one of those. So that means that you're going to have, the bonds are going to be a safer investment overall. And if the company goes into bankruptcy, the company is liquidated and the money goes to pay off those face values of the bonds. There's not, highly unlikely that there would be a dollar left over for the shareholders. They're just gone. They're out. They're kicked out. So it's just simply the matter that in normal operations, the bondholders have the prior claim on the cash flows, period to period, and in bankruptcy, the bondholders get to have whatever is the value of the company in liquidation. So, I know what that is. That's my cat walking in front of the security camera. Phineas. The one who helped me grade your exams. Anyway, where the hell was? Oh, okay. Okay. Now, okay. This is the basic outline. Real world, though, you know the price. We in real setting, we are given a bond, like CTL 6.4% 2029. The yield to maturity is 6.1%. I'm sorry, no. Price. New. Quote. Is 104.73. That's how you're going to see the screen. You're going to see the screen like this. That's what you'll see, because you'll see the price. What you want in a case like this is to know the yield. What's the market saying about this bond? Now, real quick, let me do this. Sir, is this selling at a premium or a discount to par, this bond, CTL? What's its price? First of all, tell me the price. $1,047.30. I gave you the quote. Watch that. So is this bond selling at a premium to par or at a discount to par? A premium to par. In other words, does the market like this bond or hate this bond? They like it. They've given it a like on Facebook. Okay? In fact, at that, they're giving it a little hearty on Facebook. Okay, so they like this bond. So is this coupon too much or too little? If they like it, yeah. Okay, let's try this. Okay. I am your waitress at the restaurant. I'm Ethel. Okay. So you want to order a six-ounce strip steak and potatoes and green beans, and I'll get your order for you. Now, Ethel is an older person, and she's lonely. I've got your order for you. I got you a 12-ounce steak. Wink. Wink. Okay. Do I, okay, where was I going with that? Oh, okay. Yes. Okay. Oh, I know. We're talking about the bond market. The stakes are high here. Okay. Okay. So in other words, I'm giving you more than you need, than you wanted. I am giving you more. So in other words, the 6.4% that I'm giving you is too much. So the yield should be lower. The market says you should pay something below 6.4%. You're paying 6.4%, but you should pay something, but you don't need to pay that much. So when I find the yield to maturity on this, I'm going to find a percentage that is lower than 6.4. I'm going to find a percentage that is lower than 6.4%. Because the 6.4% is inducing the market to reward this bond. Again, the 6.4% is so good that the market is pushing this bond's price above $1,000. So let's see how it would work. I'm going to do this with annual coupon payments, and then I'll do it the realistic way with semi-annuals. But with annuals, what I'm going to do here is I'm going to come up here to the top. Now, what's the term of the bond? How many years? Is that it? Yeah. Do you see that? It's 12 years. This bond has 12 years left to live. The I percent, that's what I don't know. I just leave it alone. That's the market, the yield. I ask for that, so I don't know it, so I'm going to have to work on that. So now I can say, okay, the price, now here's where you got to make sure that you put in the price. Negative, what did I say the price was? 1047, 1047, what was that last number? 30. Now the payments, and we're going to do this, is 0.064 times 1,000. Whoa. 0.064 times. Is there some reason this keyboard sucks? Times 1,000. Now you could probably figure out that's $64. I usually just do it in my head and get it wrong. Okay, so now let's go up here and get the yield to maturity on this thing. Alpha, solve. As I suspected, the yield to maturity is 5.84%. Like we thought. The market loves this bond. It pays 6.4%. The market says at that price, this bond should be paying only 5.84%. It's paying us more, so we're going to buy these bonds, push their price above par. Let's do this one with the semi. I'm going to do this again here. I'm going to break it up and do something else. Okay, now with semi-annual coupons, all you do is double the number of years, 12 years is 24 periods. Leave the I percent alone. Be careful here because the answer that comes out will be only half of the right answer. So be careful of that. I've got these problems set up in your online work where it just drives me crazy. And I wish there was some way I could warn you. Don't put in that box the answer you see on the screen. It's twice that. So, but unfortunately. Okay, now, the price value is still the same. But the payments are now $64 a year, but that's actually, per period, that's 32. They get, instead of one $64 check a year, they're getting two $32 checks a year. Everything else stays the same. So, the N is doubled for semi-annual, and I'm telling you what you how you might want to put this in your notes. For semi-annual, the N is doubled, and the payment is half. To get the yield, times your answer by two. So watch, I'm going to go up here, alpha solve. And you'll say, well, I got the answer. No, you didn't, because that was half of it. All you have to do is go over here and just say times two. Do it that way. Really? Times two. That's the fast way. Don't write it down, then take it out into the calculator and try to rekey it. Just do the times two there. So in this case, the yield is 5.85%. With semi-annuals, the YTM is 5.85%. Now, it seems like a trivial amount. It depends on the bond. The one I gave you here, the difference is going to be minimal. With a bond with different characteristics, the yield can be dramatically different based on whether you do annual or semi-annual coupons. Now, let me take you out of this and get this out of your heads for a few minutes and take you back into the larger world. Remember how I told you that one way we can classify bonds is by whether they are very short, a year or less, debt. If they're intermediate, we call them very short-term loans, bills. They usually don't have a coupon. They just have what you lend, and then you get $1,000 back at the end. Intermediates are notes. And then the long term are called the bonds. Remember that the borrower is the seller of the bond in the primary market, the writer of the bond, the issuer of the bond. Okay? The lender is the investor. The lender is the buyer. The lender is the purchaser. So in the bond market, in the primary, you, sir, have decided that you need $100 million and you want to borrow it. You would issue $100 million in bonds. They'd have a coupon and maturity date. If I am the buyer, I am lending you the money. That's the primary market. You later decide you want to get some action on some bonds. So what you might do is I might sell some of my bonds to you. You now become the bondholder of record. He has to start making his coupon payments to you instead of to me. But other than that, you didn't lend him the money. All you did is pay me back the money that I lent to him. So now he owes you. That was a kind of confusing thing. Anyway. Okay, now, short term. Yeah, go ahead.
In the case where, the bonds are sold in the secondary market, how is it determined who gets how much of it?
Whoever is the bondholder of record in the electronic. Back in the day, You see, what would happen, before there were electronics, we would literally, if I lent the money to you and then I sold my bonds to him, there had to be a communication to you. No longer write checks to him. No longer write checks to me. Write your coupon payments and your final amount to him. It actually was a physical communication. Now what happens in the world you guys are in, you and I, if you are issuers and I am an investor, we never know much about each other. It all goes through this clearinghouse, this third party. The third party, you would never have written coupons to me. You write the coupons to this clearinghouse, and then it figures out who the coupon goes to. That's how it works these days. So there's hard, and even in the event, if I am the lender, I have lent you $100 million, and this gets exactly to where I wanted to be right now in this lecture. The reality of it is that you probably are never going to meet me. You're going to meet the investment bankers, you powerful people who set up these deals. You're the ones who are actually going to lend him the money, and then you come to me to get you your money back. That's the primary market. If you issue stock, I want to buy your stock, you're not going to talk to me probably. You're going to talk to the investment bankers. They'll buy your stock, and then they will make prearrangements for me to get that stock from them. There's no real relationship anymore in that regard. There's an arm's length, which actually some people in the theory of corporations say that's one of the big problems is you don't know who I am. You have no responsibility, at least in terms of physical location. Now, bondholder, me, I lent you the money. You guys have made arrangements. I am the one you guys are friends with. You investment bankers. You guys set up a trustee who will oversee that you don't do stupid things while you owe me money. You won't give out great dividends. You won't take on dangerous projects. You'll keep your nose clean. That trustee is going to be on the board watching over you and have the power to say no. So you protect my interests, so I don't have to watch you. You do on my behalf. You're paid well for this. You guys have set him up because you know he does that kind of thing. Let's try something here. Okay. Bonds, they come in the bills. That's just, if you need money for a short-term thing, working capital management, which we'll talk about later in the course, those would be bills. I don't pay my electric bill every second I use electricity. I wait until the end of the month and then I pay it what the electricity company has fronted me for the electricity for the month. I don't pay you every day you leave work. I pay you at the end of the pay period. So in other words, I am issuing you a bill that comes due every paycheck. Bills. Notes are a little bit longer term. Those are for intermediate term projects. We've got a project that's going to probably have a life of 7 years. That's a note. We got a project where the cash flows are going to be at their best in the first 5 years. Well, let's get this thing covered now with a five-year note. Bonds are another animal in themselves. They are long term. Borrowings. If I borrow money from you, sir, 30-year bonds, we are married for 30 years. That's weird because you wear funny hats. But we are actually engaged in a relationship for a very long period of time. This has to be an important project that goes on for a very long time. Because I'm not going to get involved with you for 30 years if I need your money for 5 years. This would have to be something that's a long haul. When we invest long term, we call those capital projects. Capital projects. Those are the long haulers. They put in deep infrastructure into the company. a factory that will be future-proofed for 30 years or 40 years. A new building that will be our headquarters for the foreseeable future. Long-term investment by the company would call for long-term borrowing. Now, interestingly enough, you hear 10-year, 20-year, 30-year bonds. Almost every one of you is going to invest 30 years in a house. You're going to borrow for 30 years. You're going to issue a 30-year collateralized bond, a mortgage bond. But now we see bonds that are even longer than that. But let's start. Who would be a lender on the lender's side? The lender is going to be in a relationship for 30 years. What kind of a lender wants to put money out there and have it out there for 30 years? They want the money, the coupons, but what they really want is to put aside that $1,000 so that it comes back to them only much, much later. An investor in a 30-year bond is usually a very large institution, something that doesn't need the payoff, the face value back for a long, long time. So what kind of an institutional investor? Lender lends for a period of time that long. Doesn't need the money back for a very long time. Wants the cash flow, obviously, from the coupons, but that $1,000, I lend you the $1,000, I don't want to see that $1,000 back for 30 years. What kind of an institutional investor does that? Any guess? Say? Maybe, yeah, to create long-term. Surely the Chinese buy, and the Canadians and the Japanese and the Europeans buy our very long government debt. But private debt, corporations issuing bonds that are 30 years? What lenders lend for 30 years to a corporation? Got any idea? Well, yeah. In some cases, absolutely. If it's going to be something that is a large, like a skyscraper, that's going to last many, many years. So that would be something, real estate, we would certainly want our money out there for a long time. Another one that is a huge player in the bond market is insurance companies, life insurance companies. Life insurance companies, I've told you this before, ma'am, that you're going to die someday. What we hope is that you're not going to die very soon. That's what actuarial scientists do, is they work out, okay, very long life expectancy. So if I am a life insurance company, and I'm getting all these premiums pouring in all the time, I've got to do something with that money. Well, the big thing I'm going to do with it is pay off your death benefit. But that's not going to happen for a very, very long time. So what I would probably do, all these premiums come pouring in, hundreds of million dollars of cash inflow, where do I put that money if I don't need it for a long, long time? Oh, well, I'd probably lend long to corporations, because then the large pile of that money, the face value, wouldn't come back to me for years and years and years. And I won't need it for years and years and years. So there is one of the big, big, huge investors in bond markets is life insurance companies. Certain types of property and casualty insurance companies are also big players. Now, I'm looking at trying to find someone who looks dangerous. You, madam, highly dangerous. Now, you get car insurance, and you have accidents all the time. Crash, tinkle, okay. Well, that's one kind of property and casualty insurance, okay, P&C. However, there are other kinds of property and casualty insurance for events that are extraordinary in their scope, but very rare in their occurrence. If I am a property insurance company and I am insuring something that doesn't happen for 30 years, 50 years or more, you're going to be paying me premiums that are going to accumulate, but I won't have any claims, I won't have any payouts for many, many years. Probabilistically, it's not in any given year, there's a tiny probability that I will actually have a major payout. But over an extraordinary amount of time, it's almost certain I'm going to have a payout. So when I get those premiums in, I want to put those someplace where I won't have to worry about them for years and years and years. So, examples of events that are low frequency but high severity. What would that be? Huh? A volcano. In fact, in Italy, there is a magma flow near Mount Vesuvius that could very well cause all kinds of excitement. You know, references to Pompeii. On the bright side, if you're covered in ash, 2,000 years later, they'll dig you up and find you in some... Or more likely these days, getting smothered. On Instagram the minute before I die. Okay, here's some other ones. We're right here. Right here is one of the hot spots for low frequency but insanely high severity. Right here where we're sitting. It's called the New Madrid Fault Line. It is a buried deep, not all that far from here, and it hardly ever makes a rumble. But the last time it did, in the early 1800s, if you read the people writing about what happened, it's like reading modern science fiction apocalypse. When it broke on the line, it was so powerful, they said, The Mississippi River flowed backward. No, that's not what happened. The initial shock wave was so powerful that it literally threw the water back up the Mississippi. And then it came back down the Mississippi like a tsunami. Entire cities were wiped out. Death was, there are not even good records of how many people were killed. It was literally in the tens of thousands. Croplands flooded on both sides of the Mississippi as that wave came back down the river. Unbelievable how extraordinary. Now it would be even worse. We've got even bigger cities, and we also have much higher level of farmland being cultivated, and we also have lots and lots of pipelines, gas pipelines, even oil pipelines, propane, methane, everything. Oh, that would be all kinds of exciting. On the upside, if those go, we are basically barbecued. We don't have to worry about it. But very rare event with extreme severity. Another one. Nuclear power plants in their modern design are actually incredibly safe, notwithstanding the no nukes, they are dangerous in their own ways. The real problem is that even though there is a very low likelihood of a bad event at a nuclear power plant, if there is one, it is on an epic scale. Fukushima in Japan was insane in all of its damage. Short term, long term. In a worst case event, if the core melts through the containment at the bottom, it will go down into the earth and then it will create an unbelievable dirty bomb nuclear explosion. So, hardly ever would happen, but if it does, the consequences are staggering. One last one. There were these two buildings in New York City, in Manhattan. Beautiful two towers. So you obviously have to insure those skyscrapers against fires and disasters and all that. Well, the people buying insurance for these two towers said, what we'll do is we'll insure one, because the probability of one of these towers ever falling is almost nothing. The probability of both of them going down at the same time? Who would ever imagine? Oh, yeah. September 11th, 2001. Both of them came down. One was insured. Frequency versus severity. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.